of raising families.
Do we need the aggravation? Someone in the back yelled, a man's voice.
Heads turned to find the heckler, one of Everly's flacks, Holly knew. Several people laughed. She put on a smile.
We need a future, she replied.
Children represent the future, and without them, this community will just grow older and eventually die out.
As Holly continued speaking, Edouard Urbain turned to his wife and whispered, This is nonsense. Population growth would destroy this habitat. She nodded, knowing that what her husband meant was that population growth would threaten his work.
12 April 2096, into the ring. Manny Gaeta squinted against the glare. Even though the suit's visor was heavily tinted, Saturn's B-ring was so bright it almost made his eyes tear. Glittering, brilliant jewels of ice stretched as far as he could see in every direction. Despite himself, he grinned. Yes, the fear was there deep inside him, but so was the excitement, the exultation. What was that old line? To boldly go where no one has gone before. That's me. Boldly. Here, alone in the suit, heading into the blindingly dazzling rings, Gaeta knew that if he had to die, he wanted to die this way, doing what no one else had ever dared to try. Closing in, he muttered into his helmet microphone. He glanced at the LiDAR display on the left side of the helmet. It was breaking up into hash. Shouldn't do that, he said to himself, shaking his head. Your altimeter reading is breaking up, Wanamaker's voice sounded slightly edgy through the helmet's earphones. The laser beam is getting scattered too much by the ice particles, he replied. It's going to be tough for you to judge distances, then, Pancho said. I can eyeball it. Anything hitting you? Wanamaker asked. Not yet. I'm still more than 200 clicks from the main body of the ring. Moving fast, though. We got a good fix on your beacon. You're doing 1,200 an hour. I better slow down. Retro burn programmed for 6 minutes from now, said Wanamaker. Do you want to override it and go manual? Staring out at the overwhelming field of gleaming white, Gaeta said, No. Let the program ride. Tell me when you start getting pinged, said Pancho. Right, Gaeta replied, but he thought, what can they do about it? They'll be pushing over to the other side of the ring in another 10 minutes. Unless something goes wrong, answered a voice in his head. They'll hang here as long as they can, just in case some malfunction pops up. They'll fish you out. Yeah, Gaeta said to himself, if they can. A tiny red light winked at him from the rim of the helmet's displays. Impact, Gaeta realized. The display went dark immediately. One little ice flake hit me. A scout?
Holly was surprised at the questions from the audience. Almost all of them were from women, and they all wanted to know how soon the ZPG protocol could be lifted. The first step is to get 6,667 signatures on our petition, she answered more than once. We can't do a thing until we have enough signers. Everly's people asked questions, too, mostly about how much money could be brought in from mining Saturn's rings, but Professor Wilmot picked the questioners from a sea of waving hands, and he picked mostly women. Through it all, Everly was strangely quiet. Not that he didn't speak well or answer questions, but he ignored the population growth question almost entirely. Holly had expected him to paint dreadful word pictures of how the habitat would be overrun with babies and sink into a squalling, poverty-stricken disaster. But he didn't. He spoke positively about how wealthy the habitat could become by mining the rings. To Holly, he seemed to be avoiding the ZPG issue altogether. Until Professor Wilmot called on Jean-Marie Urbain. She stood up, impeccably clad in a dark, short-sleeved sheath adorned tastefully with hints of jewelry, clearly the best-dressed woman in the auditorium. Holly thought she looked a bit nervous, almost timid, while the automatic microphones along the auditorium's side walls focused on her. Her husband, seated beside her, looked more annoyed than pleased that his wife was asking a question.
Go ahead, Madame Urbain, said Wilmot gently.
My question is for Mr. Everly, she said, her voice trembling slightly. So, what will happen to the research programs that the scientists are conducting if our habitat resources must be devoted more and more to a growing population?
Eberly came out of his chair as if propelled by a spring, smiling widely.
It's a setup, Polly realized. He coached her to ask that question.
By the time Eberly had crossed the three steps between his chair and the lectern, he had changed his expression. The smile was gone. He looked somber, almost grim. "As we all understand," he began, his voice low, controlled, "the main purpose of this habitat was to carry out scientific studies of the planet Saturn, its rings, and its moons. But if we must divert more and more of our resources to accommodating a constantly growing population, we will have less and less to devote to the science work." Holly wanted to object, but Eberly wasn't finished. "Scientific information is our major export product, as of now," he went on. "Essentially, the International Consortium of Universities back on Earth pays us to provide data about the Saturn system. It's not enough to keep our entire population going, of course. The major part of our economy is internal. We grow our own food, we provide goods and services for one another. We have built a strong internal economy for ourselves." He bowed his head and hesitated a heartbeat. Then, looking up again, he said, "But if our population begins to grow unchecked, and we have no other external sources of income, then our economy will be forced to provide food and shelter and education and, eventually, jobs for our growing population. The scientists will have to depend exclusively on whatever funding the ICU provides, which won't be enough to sustain them at their current level of activity. We will have to cut back on our science programs, which means the ICU will cut back on its funding. A vicious circle." Dozens of hands went up in the audience, but Eberly still wasn't finished. "However," he said, his voice stronger, "I can see a way out of this dilemma." He allowed a small smile to creep across his face. "To allow population growth, we need a new source of income. Hanging out there before our very eyes is that source, the rings of Saturn. Once we begin selling water to Selene and Ceres and the other human establishments off Earth, we will have a source of income that will allow us to end the Zero Growth Protocol once and for all." Eberly's flacks along the sidewalls immediately began applauding, and quickly most of the rest of the audience joined in. Holly sat on the stage, stunned at the simplicity of his scheme. She watched, crestfallen, as the audience got to its feet, applauding. She wanted to rush to the lectern and tell them that no one would be allowed to mine the rings until it was absolutely established that there were no organisms living there that might be hurt. But she knew it would be useless. Eberly had taken her own campaign issue and turned it against her. "You want population growth? Mind the rings to pay for it." "Nadia's going to die when she hears about this," Holly said to herself. "And Malcolm's going to win re-election by a landslide."
Nadia Wonderly was in her cluttered office, totally engrossed at the view from Gaeta's helmet camera that was displayed on her desktop screen. It was like falling from a cliff down into a gleaming glacier. The screen was filled with glittering bits of ice, interwoven strands curled and entwined so intricately that her fastest computer program could not model them in real time. "Manny's falling into the ring," she knew. "He'll plow right through it like a meteor crashing into the ice particles." "Retro burn complete," Gaeta's voice came through the computer speakers.
"Copy retro complete," Wanamaker's voice. "Your velocity vector is on the money."
At Wonderly's insistence, they had slowed Gaeta's approach to the ring. Even though it was by far the densest of Saturn's rings, she had argued, the B-ring was scarcely 2 kilometers thick. If Gaeta didn't slow down, he would zip through the ring too fast to collect any samples. Gaeta had reluctantly agreed. The first time he'd gone to the rings, his trajectory had been arranged so